This is The Forgetting.
I collapsed twice, got up, and went to work.
Oh, my God.
And I didn't tell anyone.
Yeah.
And then...
You've got to tell people.
I said calmly, "Dad, you know, I'm going to drive us both into the freaking river if you keep just yammering in my side of my ear, and we got here safely." So and that's how we kind of that's how we communicate these days.
You know, I haven't, you know, with my family and stuff, I always tell them that I tell them 60% of what's going on because I don't want to worry them. And
right.
And God's given me a good ability to fight, but the string is unraveling now. I could see it more.
From the WGBH studio in Boston Public Library in Boston, Massachusetts, this is The Forgetting, a podcast about dementia. I'm David Shank, author of the book The Forgetting and senior advisor to an international research consortium called Cure Alzheimer's Fund, which helps make this podcast possible. And with me is my friend and co-host, I wonder what comes first, friends or co-hosts, Greg O'Brien, author of On Pluto, Inside the Mind of Alzheimer's. His book has that subtitle because Greg has early onset Alzheimer's, and he is committed to reporting his experience for as long as he possibly can. That's why this podcast exists. Hey, Greg, great to see you in person.
Good to see you. Wow, I could shake your hand.
So this is episode number 11.
Really?
Our producer, Sean, told me to keep track, so that's one of my tasks.
Okay.
That's a Roman numeral X plus one, in case wanted to convert that in your head. I want to tell...
You have a good face for radio. I don't know if I told you that.
Oh, that's a stale joke.
I know.
You can do better than that.
I'm working on it.
We're recording this on July 27th, 2017, and it's been about 8 weeks since our last conversation. So one of the things we're doing in the podcast is telling people how long it's been, because we're tracking your progress, if we can call it that.
Whatever
you're going through, and giving our audience a sense of the changes that are happening. So
can we check the thesaurus on progress?
Right. It may be a little bit of a euphemism to use that word. Just for starters, tell me how you're feeling and what's been going on since you and I last spoke.
Well, clock's ticking a bit. More recently, I've had a series of blackouts. The brain signals aren't going down. 2 years ago, it started, and I didn't tell anyone. There was a time my son, Connor, was with me in D.C., and I had a blackout, or my mom used to have what they call TIAs, mm-hmm. which are...
like mini strokes.
Mini strokes.
Yeah.
He came back in the room. I don't know to what extent he realized it, but I didn't know who he was. And that happened a couple times. But I didn't want to tell anyone because, you know, I hate the word pity, you know, and I don't want to wear it on my sleeve. So more recently, I've had some additional blackouts. 2 weeks ago on Nantucket, I was there, and the right side of my body collapsed twice, and I was on the ground. And I realized after that I had to go tell my doctors that it wasn't cool not to. And
so can you describe how you experience a blackout? Do you wake up and you're on the floor, or what happens?
A blackout, it's just this journey. It happens differently with different people, but in the moment, you don't know where you are, who you are, and sometimes you're out just for seconds.
Yeah.
And then you're disorientated. And then the right side of the body collapsing, that was scary because there's no, I'm trying to think of the word. I was going to say announcement. That's not the right word. Like your brain going, hey, your body's going to collapse.
Right.
But
no warning at all.
No warning at all.
But boom. You don't lose consciousness. You just kind of...
The blackout. Sometimes you do, but
right.
But with the body collapsing, just in an instant, you're down on the ground. And so I was with someone who has been very good enough to give me some work in communication, because if I don't do that, my family goes into bankruptcy. He was ahead of me, and we were surrounded by a lot of people, and he didn't see it, and I didn't tell him, because I knew he would take me to the hospital, he'd stay with me, we'd miss our meeting, and then he'd say, hey, Greg, I love you, man, like a brother, but we just can't do this. So
right.
I collapsed twice, got up, and went to work.
Oh, my God.
And I didn't tell anyone.
Yeah.
And then...
You've got to tell people.
And then I sat down for a while, and he said, go get some coffee, because he didn't know. And I was afraid if I stood up, I'd collapse again. So I just sat there and didn't tell a soul. And then something in my heart said, you have to go talk to your doctor. And I did. And so I wasn't able to drive at night before, and now my license has been withdrawn. So yeah. I can't drive anymore, and that's a real kick in the ass. And it's just another, I feel like, you know, God's given me a good heart and you know, Irish fighter, but I feel like I'm a centipede and another shoe fell. Mm. And it's been deep depression for me about it. And, you know, I haven't, you know, with my family, and I always tell them that, I tell them 60% of what's going on because I don't want to worry them. And,
right.
And God's given me a good ability to fight, but the string is unraveling now. I could see it more.
So honestly, the stuff about the car being taken away, is that more of a practical problem or more just like you just the emotional, the huge emotional loss of
It's the emotional loss,
independence.
You know. I don't mind being like driving Miss Daisy.
Yeah.
It's the loss of freedom and the reminder of where this is going. And so I'm riding my bike now for miles, and I said, okay, you know, I could sit down and feel sorry for myself, or I could get into kick-ass shape at 67.
Right.
So I decided to get into kick-ass shape. So don't piss me off, okay?
Yeah. What's your strongest muscle so that I try to avoid that one?
Probably my legs right now from pedaling the bicycle.
All right. I'll stay out of the orbit of your...
Yeah, yeah. That's probably a good thing because you're freaking me out now.
Right. If I decide to go after you verbally, I will make sure that okay. The legs are at least,
right.
You know...
I might be able to kick for the Patriots now.
I'm glad you're still getting exercise.
Well, the exercise, as my doctors have said, is key in this journey of Alzheimer's, exercise. I'm on the legal limits of medication, but as you know, and the Cure Alzheimer's Fund knows that there haven't been any new medications in 10 years.
So. Right.
So Dr. Rudy Tanzi has told me, who's the chief researcher, he's your hero, he's my
right.
hero.
Yeah, absolutely.
At Cure Alzheimer's, that you got to get exercise, you got to write, use your brain. So I write all the time.
Yeah.
And you got to eat well and sleep.
Right.
And that's another thing, too, before I forget.
Well, let me just pause 1 second and we will go back to that. But that I'm glad you brought it up in that way because we do know on the science side of this, we do know a ton about this disease, and you're right that we haven't been able to come up with any medication yet that slows down the disease even by a day. But we do know a couple things for certain, and that is it's now documented that exercise does help stave off the disease for some people. So exercise is key. Now, it doesn't mean if you exercise perfectly every day in your life starting, you know, from age 10, you're not going to get the disease. We can't say that it's a 100% guaranteed preventative, but we do know that it makes a difference in these giant studies. Same thing with sleep. If you can start sleeping well in your early adulthood and you can maintain, obviously that's a big if because everyone has sleep issues and they get worse as we get older, as I know, I'm sure you know. And nutrition. So, you know, what we've been told for so long about eating heart-healthy food, that actually turns out to be brain-healthy food, and that impacts...
That'd be like chips and cheese?
Right. As much cheese and as much lamb as possible, I think, is really the diet. Okay. No. So people know we're joking that, you know, everyone knows what a heart healthy, you know, Mediterranean diet and low fat and high protein, and doesn't mean don't enjoy, you know, your life and eat the foods you like, but do that in moderation. And also, you know, back to the exercise thing, which is so important. And I think it's nice for you that exercise is, I understand it, been a part of your life. You're a vigorous guy. You're an exerciser anyway.
Yeah.
When I met you, you were a big runner.
In school
Yeah. So I interrupted you, but there was a purpose to it.
Really?
So,
now I forgot, though.
Yeah. I knew that would happen, but you were talking about your exercise regimen, I think.
Yeah.
And your
well, it's and maybe our mystery guest may have some comments on that.
Right. Yeah, the whole mystery's blown. Yeah, and you just gave me that smirk. I can't. It frustrates me that I can't even keep a secret from Greg O'Brien. I mean, I've got all the advantages in the world, and still, all the secrets spill out. So, the secret is that I arranged for your two sons, Connor and Brendan, to join us today. And Sean, our producer, and I have been talking about this for a while. Obviously, we want to get your family into this public conversation because they're such an important part of your story. And this seemed like a great time being in this beautiful studio in Boston. And it's somewhat convenient. Yeah, it's convenient to you guys, right? So now I'm formally welcoming you guys in. You've been very good about being quiet.
It was hard not to jump in a couple times.
I bet.
I didn't want to spoil the mystery.
Yeah. So why don't you introduce yourselves? Brendan, you start because you're the oldest, and so you're the most important,
yep.
Obviously.
No,
I'm oldest, so that's how I see the world. And
yeah. No, I'm Brendan O'Brien, Greg's oldest son. I live here in Boston, and happy to have you guys up here. It's nice to have you guys visit the city.
How old are you, Brendan?
I'm 34, just turned 34
right.
About a couple weeks ago.
So your dad was diagnosed...
And we have Connor, my
right.
younger brother.
Oh,
here,
I'm so. Getting to him. I'm getting to him. As I said, he's not the oldest, so
yeah.
he will be included.
By the way, let me cut you off. Connor O'Brien, the least important person in this family. 28 years old, going strong. Almost drove Dad and I into a river on the way over here. So that's
yeah. we got into a fight about because I paranoia.
Well, back to Brendan.
It's a good, but paranoia is. Can I tell this anecdote?
Absolutely.
Paranoia is part of the disease, and I don't trust anything. I just say, I trust God, and that's it. And
yeah.
And so we're listening to Siri and some other thing, and I'm second-guessing Connor, and he's yelling and screaming, and I'm yelling and screaming. Finally, he says, look.
No, I'm not yelling and screaming. You were yelling and screaming.
And he says, I'm going to drive you into a river if you don't
shut
it.
No, I said.
Oh, what'd you say? Go ahead.
No, I know. I am very calm. I'm just like, nope, Dad, no, we're not taking a ride here. We're going to go up here, blah, blah, blah. We're listening to... an app called Waze, and you know it's going to take us where we need to go, and you're screaming, and I said calmly, Dad, you know I'm going to drive us both into the freaking river if you keep just yammering in my side of my ear, and we got here safely. So it's and that's how we kind of that's how we communicate these days. So and it's
let me ask you a serious question, Connor. Because you know that I didn't know you guys before your dad had this disease, so I can't say what part of him is the disease and what part of him is just Greg. I'm sure he was a pain in the butt.
That's a great question.
15 years ago.
I don't think any of us can figure out what part that's, of the
that's
disease
a, yeah.
is Greg.
Yeah.
But that's part of the insidiousness of the disease is you can never tell. You don't see it. It's not like, oh, that growth there, that's the disease, and this other mm-hmm. thing, that's the person, because it's affecting your dad's brain. Obviously, it's affecting, therefore, his mind and everything he does, and it's definitely his moods, his temper, and everything. So I wonder how you think about that, because I know your family. It's a loving family. You guys love each other. It's a beautiful family. I fell in love with you guys the first time I met you, you know, a couple of years ago. But I wonder how you deal with, like, when you get angry at your dad and you want to shout at him, and you obviously do sometimes, but you also know that what's going on is that disease, and you probably feel like a little guilt about that because you want to. You don't want to be yelling at a disease.
Well, I think I brought this up to Brendan numerous times. You know, Brendan, we have a great balance. Brendan is the one, it takes me. I know I've shouted, you know, outlashed at my dad numerous times. Brendan is, and we're kind of in between. Like, I'll calmly say, "Hey, like I just said, hey, Dad, I'm gonna drive us into the river." Brendan will be like, "You know, Dad, you know,
shut
that bleep up, this and that." So it's kind of like a good balance, I would say, but.
I don't see the balance there. I see both you guys yelling.
We're both just yelling. We just have different methods.
I see.
Different methods.
It feels different.
Yeah.
And Brendan these days is spending more time with your dad. Isn't that right? I'm Connor. Is spending more time.
Yeah, Connor,
so
yeah.
he would be the guy who's more frustrated of the two of you,
for
right,
sure.
day to day.
Exactly. I mean, like, I think one of the things that going through this and trying to process everything and plan as a family, it takes a commitment from every single member of the family, the immediate family, to actually make progress. And that's difficult, you know, especially when you have people that are spread out and living in, you know, and so, you know, with everyone spread out, that weight doesn't disperse. And a lot of it, with Connor being at home, settles on, you know, Connor's doing a lot of the grunt heavy lifting here, you know, and I think no matter how hard we all try to come in and help and assist and stuff like that. So, you know, it's the weight of the world. And, you know, I think a lot of it just rests with him and with Connor, who's there.
So. Right. And so, and do you take on different roles? There's two more of you. There's your sister and there's your mom, right? So those are the five principals, right, including your dad. And does everyone take on their own specific role in what they do and what they try to avoid?
Yeah, well, so Colleen took on the role of having a baby, so now he's got a grandchild.
Right,
so
that's a good role.
She lives in Baltimore, so, you know, aside from, she does a great job coming up and visiting and stuff like that, but I think that took a lot of pressure off Connor and I, you know, grandchild.
Right. That's a good
now
one.
He's fine, so we can go on with our lives. You know, and I think, you know, my mom is, you know, she's still processing a lot of stuff. And
I'm not so sure she knows how to move forward with this. She's processing. Well, you guys should talk. So
you mean emotionally? You can, occasionally get a word in, Greg.
No, but I think I'm learning from, I would like, did you say I was a co-host?
Yeah, well, yeah. Maybe I shouldn't have used that word because it gives you license to
do whatever
you want. No, I would
like them to talk about the dynamic and your thoughts. And
well, you really have to look the thing dead in the eye, which my dad's done.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's not an easy thing to do for most people, even for Connor and I. We don't, you know, it's hard for us to stare this thing in the face and...
Right.
And have it back down. And so I think my mom has a similar trouble with that. I think it's because it means acknowledging all types of changes within your life that you don't want to happen, that you hadn't planned for, that are going to be difficult, that are going to make life not what you had imagined when they first got married.
Right.
Or even when they had kids or anything like that.
Right. And you guys... you guys are now, I mean, you're both adults, but you're still growing up and
I'm not an adult.
Right. That's a different issue.
Okay.
But you guys have now, remind me when Greg was diagnosed. It's going on eight years, right?
Yeah, 2010. Yeah, I think it's 2010.
So you were 21 or something like that, right, Connor?
It's about that. Yeah. 2009, I think, is when Dad, Brendan would have more information on this.
I think it was 2010. Right,
so this has been basically all of your adult life.
Right.
Like your childhood's ending and you're going out into the world when you want to be basically like leaving your parents behind, you know, and getting your independence and doing your own thing and charting your own course. You're having to face this on that day.
Right. Well, I think, you know, I think Brendan... Correct me if I'm wrong, Brent, you were the first to actually, Dad, you know, one-on-one, you guys spoke about it. Mm-hmm. When I think about it, I think of all of us as a family in the family room. So maybe that could have been, maybe you guys had this talk way, way before that.
No,
I have no idea.
It was right around the same time. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But
you two had like the first, you know, outside of Colleen and I, had the first.
Brendan, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think when, because as we said before, you know, my maternal grandfather, my mother, my uncle, and before my father died. They had Alzheimer's before my father died. He was diagnosed with dementia. And then I had the two serious head injuries, and I have the APOE4, which appears to be a gene on both sides. But when I talked to Brendan for the first thing, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think the first thing he said was, well, that explains a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that accurate?
Yeah. I mean, it's...
They saw stuff happening.
And the one of the great, and I've said this before, but the one of the greatest things about that was it allowed me to be more patient with him moving forward. Like, there were all these things that were happening that I was noticing that I would get so frustrated just get so angry with him. And knowing that there was some kind of a reason behind these things, whether he would flare up into a rage or whatever, you know, and like now you can, before you say something, take a deep breath, realize that it's not all him.
Right.
You know, even though some of it.
But I'm sure there was the flip side of having to suddenly stare this thing and know, you know, you can do 5 minutes of reading and know where it's going and know it's not going to end well. It's not going to proceed, you know, well.
Exactly.
It's just going to get worse and worse.
Exactly. And this all happened right around the time I was actually moving to Boston, where I was originally going to, I had actually had plans to move out to California, and I pretty much had my truck packed up, and like, I don't know the exact timing of all this and stuff, but you know, job opportunity came up in Boston, and I took that instead.
So you kind of pulled back, and you stayed closer to home.
I don't know if that was
a result of this.
I'm not 100. Maybe it was a little bit more subverse.
Right.
But, yeah. So
it's all connected.
Yeah.
And back to you, Connor. I wonder, like, I mean, if you can just be frank about this. Like, do you feel like you've given up a part of your life? Because I know you do an awful lot of stuff for your dad.
Yes. Yes. And but not like, my dad and I have had, you know, I'm not going to take this. We've had some. We've never been closer, and that's kind of weird to say because we've never had more arguments between us, but we've never been closer. That's kind of an oxymoron, I guess, but it's
not for me. I feel like, I mean, I can relate. I remember being 21, and I actually in my own family, I was like geographically so far away from my dad, and we spent years like barely talking to each other. We were in touch. It's not like he wasn't speaking to me, but I can see how it would be both frustrating to have to spend so much time and not do what you want to do, but also to like have that closeness that you might not otherwise be forced to have. And that's, I'm sure you feel that's a blessing now. And I'm sure in the future you'll look back and go, oh my God, you know, we got to really know each other as grownups. Yeah. I don't even know if you guys are at a place where you can answer this, but your dad has taken a radically extreme approach to this disease in terms of his like being the opposite of denial. I'm sure there's denial elements in there too, but he talks about stuff publicly in a way that is exceptional. That's why I got to know him. That's how I got to know him. That's why we're doing this podcast. It makes him, it's a gift to the community for sure. And it also seems to me that maybe it's a gift to you guys, but I don't know that for sure. So I wonder just kind of how you react to that. Obviously, you kind of have to go along with it, but how does that public part of this, and you don't know any other way. It's not like you've had another dad who's had Alzheimer's in a private way, but I wonder how that part fits into how you deal with this and whether you're all on board or whether there are days where you wish, wow, I just wish my dad would not do an interview today and just deal with like the, you know, the important family stuff privately.
Well, I think this is kind of sad. I think you know, when my dad does, you know, interviews and public things like this, he explains stuff that I've never known, stories and things like that. He kind of opens up way more than he does. Maybe I can't speak for Brendan, but he opens up way more in speeches he's given. And you know, after, you know, any given speech, I'm like, Dad, you never told me that. I didn't know about this. I didn't know about that. And so I think this is, like, again, I can't speak for Brendan. I think my dad is more open to Brendan than he is to me. So, you know, things like this, doing a podcast, doing an interview, a book signing, blah, 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 you know, it doesn't matter. It's just, he opens up a little bit more. And I think that's That's great. I think that's a...
So it's useful to you that he that something is getting him to open up more.
Yeah.
You feel like you're learning more.
Right, exactly.
All right,
yeah.
So before you answer that, Brendan, I've been told, I just want to remind the audience again where we are, because this is an amazing and very unusual situation for all of us, that we're at this fantastic studio, at WGBH studio at the Boston Public Library, and we're sitting in this beautiful open air room with these glass walls facing the street, and we actually have an audience today of people in the Boston Public Library Cafe. So thank you all for listening. And all right, so how do you react to that, Brendan? The whole public kind of dimension of this.
Well, you know, overall, there's a lot of frustration, but I think Connor which I didn't think of, put a nice perspective on it that otherwise he probably wouldn't be opening up. You know, because he's a pretty, even though it's crazy to think that he's a closed off man, but in a lot of respects he is. And Connor's very right that he's almost more open in these public settings where he's speaking or on podcasts than he is internally with the family. But that's a good point. It's a positive outlook on it that if that's what gets him to open up, that's great. The frustration of it is that it's the dirty laundry is aired.
Yeah.
And it's not so much that the laundry is dirty. It's that it gets aired, and then we have a hard time getting him to come back and put it in the wash and try to clean it and take care of it. Mm. And like, so, you know, with the stuff with our house and his finances and all the struggles that our family is going through internally.
We're heading to bankruptcy.
Mm. Yeah, getting aired. And then I'm coming home and trying to get my parents to acknowledge the stuff and make proper plans and take action. It's been really difficult. Rightfully so. I'm sure it's a hard thing to acknowledge, but it's a lot. It's just like, you know, I'll be, you know, I'm out and I run into someone I haven't seen in a while. And they're like, oh, you know, how are your parents? Did you guys finally sell the house? And I'm like,
right.
No, they've been, you know, just doing nothing about it.
So the Greg O'Brien, if I can kind of put this in a different way, you can tell me if this is right. But the Greg O'Brien I know, like the guy who's just an open book.
Am I dead yet?
And you're still here. We're all still on the
earth. Is this my wake? Because I want some beer at my wake.
Right. It is. It's true that we've gotten more words in without you talking.
Well, I want to listen to the boys. So yeah. Go ahead.
But tell me if this is right, Brendan. The guy I know who's so open and so willing to face everything. In a way, that's kind of a different guy from the one you deal with day to day, because you're just like trying to get him to face stuff. I just sit down and say, how you doing, Greg? And he's like, well, here are all these problems. And it gets very intimate.
I don't know if it would be that black and white. I think part of it, and I'm not saying this because you're in the room, if I'm not trying to sugarcoat this, I think it's just a little overwhelming for him. And he's just trying to figure out what's important, you know, like, and that's where we had a really productive but heated, you know, conversation several weeks ago about the priorities, where it's like this whole mission of Alzheimer's, while incredibly important for the community and everything,
right?
The family has some ways taken a backseat to his mission.
Wow.
Since we had that conversation, I feel like we've shuffled things around, but there's so much, you know, he's got his book, he still needs to bring an income with his business.
Yeah.
We have our family affairs.
Yeah.
And then he's dealing with these demons that are just...
We did put together a financial team, which Brendan helped.
That's great.
Yeah, so finally, you know, things are finally starting to...
Well, you should also... I know this is maybe just going to make me sound like a schmuck, but you should reach out to me also if you feel like I'm getting in the way of...
No,
what you
God,
guys
no,
are
no,
doing.
No. It's not that.
I didn't take it's that not, as an insult at all.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But if you're like, you know, my dad doing this podcast in 2 weeks is like... He should be doing something else that day.
Yeah, no, this is the important stuff. I think there's other things that that come up.
They're talking about the financial realities that I can't do, and I've been reluctant to give up control, and now I have, and we have a financial team. I am incapable of solving the problems that Brendan's talking about, but I have been reticent to allow other people to step in.
I see, to give over control.
So no one at this table thinks that I'm capable of solving those problems, but I've been a blockade in allowing people to do it. And just to give people who are listening a word picture, did you ever see the movie Psycho?
Yes.
Okay. Remember before there was a stabbing, you heard...
Of course.
Okay.
That's the famous part.
That's okay. Well, that's a word picture of what Alzheimer's is when I have all these things coming at me. And so what do I do? And maybe this is a good explanation for the boys. I go back to my muscle media, my muscle memory. And I said this a long time ago, as a journalist who's been a seasoned journalist who has family tree decimated by this, shame on me if I don't report this story. And early on, and you've heard me say this, I talked to doctors and friends. In fact, my neurologist, when I was diagnosed, he said, you have a calling to write about this. You need to write about this. And everyone I talked to said, you got to put this down on paper because you can do it in ways, you have the training that other people don't have. And I took that seriously, and I was there at both my mom and dad's bedside when they died. And I just said, you know what, we're going to start to talk about this. And I promised my mom right at the end. I said, Mom, I'm going to talk about this.
Right. So what about the private side? What about your role as, you know, as the family, you know, the dad and the family steward and everything? Do you feel like the public side helped you kind of ignore your responsibilities?
Well,
and
no,
these guys are bringing you
it,
back.
It helped me ignore what I couldn't do anymore.
Right.
There's a difference.
And what you need to do is what? Turn over control to your
and
kids?
And whoever. I'm not in charge anymore. You know, I think what happens in Alzheimer's is it attacks, you know, water finds its own level, and it attacks in different ways. And I've always used the explanation of Hal in 2001 Space Odyssey, the computer, the demon computer, that's Alzheimer's. And so Hal said there's, to the astronauts, there's only so much juice. Can you go to the right? No, I can't because you want me to go to the left. Can you go forward? No, I can't because you want me to go in reverse. And so I have only so much juice up here. And I've said that juice is going to be directed to who I am as a writer and a journalist. And I'm going to let the other stuff go. And I never really was good at finance. And everybody in my family knows that. But the mistake that I've made, and if anyone's listening, hopefully they could either look to their parents or look to themselves, I refuse to give up control of that. So ignorance is bliss. And what the boys have done is brought me to that crisis moment where they said, Dad, we know you can't solve this, but you have to let us or experts solve the financial side. And shame on me, it's taken me this long, but I'm there now.
Just to jump in real quick is that, because you mentioned like let the boys take over, take control. And I think it's an important point that one of the issues is that, I mean, I just got engaged. I have a life that I'm starting. Connor has to go live his life.
Right.
It's really, really difficult because the whole family, it has to make these crazy sacrifices. But at the same time, the more sacrifices that we make, the more that we're putting our own lives in this funnel. And so that's what, you know.
And I think that was my come to Jesus moment where I said, okay, you know, Colleen is married, got a baby. Brendan is getting engaged. Connor needs to take his visions and dreams and go and do that. And I'm saying I'm holding everyone back, and we need that financial plan, and it's taken me all this time. And
happened.
That's my fault. I own that. That's in the process. Yeah. But I own that. I'm not. There's no excuse for that. It was a mistake I made.
Made more progress in the last 2 weeks than probably the previous 3 years of trying to make this happen.
So maybe next time we do a podcast, I should get one of you guys on the phone and make sure that he's like still letting that happen.
Yeah.
I could be
be part of the check-in. The next podcast.
No, I know we've told him too much.
And do you think and you think maybe the public side of this, and I know you're not blaming the podcast, but I think you think that maybe the public side of that helped him not take responsibility
No, I think he would have
facing it up to
probably
it.
Found a different outlet.
Yeah.
You know, I think, like I said before, this is an incredibly difficult thing to face head on,
yeah.
Which he's done in a certain light. And we all have our ways of ignoring things. You know, like he said, ignorance is bliss. I think probably would have found a different outlet for that.
But let me ask you a different question, and this is totally selfish, but I wonder, I'm sure you've looked ahead to where your dad, who's probably the most articulate person I've ever met, can't be as articulate, and that's part of what this podcast is about, if people, frankly, to kind of hear that decline, and I know you want to show that, Greg, is...
I'm seeing the decline, but trying to not show it, because my writing is, you know, the essence of who I am as a person, and, you know, your soul is another part of who you are, but the writing process is becoming a lot tougher. I've become dyslexic in part now. It's not coming together the way it did, and it's I'm seeing that decline. It's taking far longer, and it's scaring the shit out of me. And what I had said before is because that's so much an essence of who I am. When that stage happens and you get to the end, I'm just telling the boys, I don't want to be here. I don't want to be in a freaking nursing home. I ain't going there.
All right, so since we only have a minute left, I'm actually not going to ask the hard, real question about kind of the suicidal stuff, because we have talked about that. We'll talk about it some more when we have a little more time, and forgive me for not going down that road, because it's important. And we'll have you guys back. We'll talk more about this. Obviously, there's so many important things that came up, and I really appreciate you being here and being as open as your dad is so foolish to be.
Think it really matters.
It's funny. I saw in his eyes at one point, he was like, holy shit, they're being as honest as I am.
Yeah.
He's like, shit, yeah, I didn't plan on this. I thought they were going to come in and just paint this like nice, beautiful picture. Yeah. And we kind of laid it out the way he does.
Yeah, we need someone to put the brakes on here. Yeah. Yeah. There's no one at the table who's going to do that. All right. Well, that is, unfortunately, that's it for our program today. Greg and I would like to humbly thank our guests, Brendan and Connor O'Brien, for joining us. Here at the WGBH studio, our engineer was Gary Mott. Thank you, Gary. The Forgetting is a production of WGBH News in Boston and WCAI in Woods Hole, Massachusetts. Our producer is the one, the only, Sean Corcoran. Our theme music was composed and produced by Dr. Rudy Tanzi, who has come up a couple times in this conversation and usually does. He's also the chair of the research consortium at Cure Alzheimer's Fund. Thank you, Rudy, as always. Greg, you still owe me $100. Did you bring that today?
No, I'm going to fax it to you.
You always say that.
I know. Love you, brother.
All right, love you too.
Connor, by the way, thinks you're more handsome than me. So.
Of course. Well, look at me. How? What else could you think?
Yeah. Facial hair works.
Pretty much. We got in the car, and Dad's like, you know, make sure you tell David that I'm more handsome than him. I'm like, yeah, what does that even mean? Is that an inside joke? Like,
well, he's smarter. That's why.
Okay. He is smart.
And I need to be both. I'm competitive too. I'm not. You guys aren't the only competitive people on earth.